Yo, 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 what's good, everybody? What's good? Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kit podcast. Welcome back. So you guys know how we're doing it. This is the episode right after week 15. So we got a lot to get into today. Week 15 was a good one. Got to dive into a lot on today's pod. Obviously, we'll talk about some NFL. We'll talk about some of the games over the past weekend. Was it just me? And you guys know, this is what I go to school for, like broadcast communications, right? I obviously have to do this pod. A couple people hit me up, and they was like, there's NFL games on Saturday? And I was like, surprisingly, yeah. So I was a little bit, I had a couple people hit me up. They were off guard about Saturday games, in week 15. They didn't know that there were actual like NFL games on Saturday coming up in week 15 this past week, but they were. So yeah, so we got some Saturday games. We had some Saturday games that were pretty fun to watch, whatever. Obviously Sunday, and then we got to get the Monday Night Football. And we're going to probably start there. I also want to talk about Ja Morant and his return to the NBA, or I should say to the Grizzlies, and what he looked like in his debut. So I want to get to that. That's huge. But a lot of NFL, a lot of football. It's December. It's mid-December. Christmas is around the corner. I wish you guys a Merry Christmas. I will definitely drop another episode before Christmas, but just wish you guys a Merry Christmas. It's that time of the year. I got my hot chocolate right next to me. I'm excited. I'm amped. It's a little cold outside, but that's okay. That is okay. So you guys know how we give it up. I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kidd of the Isaiah Kidd Podcast. Like I said, I'm pretty excited, you know, very much in tune with the season, you know. And I don't think there's too many better things than December in the NFL as we are getting closer and closer to playoff football. And you know teams are trying to fight for positioning. Teams are trying to get, you know, catch on fire at the right time, hit their stride in the right time. And we're gonna just start with the Eagles Seahawks Monday night game. That was a really good game. It was the first ever flex Monday night game. So instead of us watching Kansas City in New England, we got to watch Philly and Seattle. And I will say this. First thing is this. I think this year, if there was one lesson that almost I will say every team should walk away with this year, is you should try and have a viable backup quarterback, right? Like, I with so many quarterbacks, starting level quarterbacks too, like guys that's either elite or pretty good, or guys that's even making like a lot of money, right? Like a guy like Deshaun Watson, who not elite, but he's making a lot of money. Like, you invest so much, these teams invest so much into their starting quarterbacks. It pays dividends to have a quality backup. Don't got to be Steve Young, right? Doesn't have to be Steve Young, right? But you got to, like, I think this year has kind of shown you, especially in the league that we're in today, in the modern game, it pays dividends to, and you got to put some type of value on having a viable backup quarterback, because there's a couple situations where it could have went the rot, but it hasn't because they've had backup. Like, for instance, Cincinnati. We thought Cincinnati was just going to be downhill spiraling top 8 pick, right? They're not. Since Jake Brennan has taken over, he's scoring like 30 points a game every time you look up. Gardner Minshew, he's basically led Indianapolis throughout most of the year. Case Keenum, he won a game for the Texans. So, like, in Pittsburgh steadily just having issues with their quarterback room. Like, so it pays dividends to have a solid backup. Joshua Dobbs, his story is amazing. It pays dividends. And you kind of saw that point in case versus Philadelphia. Monday night, Seahawks, Eagles. Drew Lock didn't have, like, this crazy stat game. But Drew Lock, a guy who has physical capabilities. He has good physical capabilities. Can really sling it. Little mobile. You know, he played well. And he led Seattle game-winning drive over the Eagles. And let's just get right into it. Let's just cut right to the bait. The Eagles clearly have a defensive issue. Like, they clearly have a glaring weakness in their back seven, in the back end of their secondary of their defense. And, you know, I've been reading up on it. Like, hey, you know, Philly, the Eagles, they demoted their DC that they had coming into the year. They demoted their DC. Now Matt Patricia's taking over. And reports coming out like, hey, the other DC, you know, he lacked confidence. And I kind of get it. I looking at his track record, he doesn't have a real extensive track record. You look at some of the guys that's on that defense, it's a lot of veteran, older stars on that defense, like a Darius Slay, a Fletcher Cox, a Brandon Graham, where, you know, kind of hard to read the room, and he lacked confidence. So be it, right? But I've been watching Philly for most of the year. I'm not going to say I've watched every game of the Eagles, but I've watched, out of the 14 games that they have played this year, I can confidently say I've watched more than half of them, at least. I've watched at least more than half of their 14 games. I've watched about 10 Philly games. And every time I watch them, their defense is just not up to par, especially comparatively when you look about and when you think about last year. Their defensive line was dominant last year. And with their secondary already having issues, now with Darius Slay out, right, he's out of the equation. He's having surgery. James Bradbury he's just been getting picked on relentlessly. Like, he got picked on relentlessly versus San Francisco. Obviously, Deebo Samuel all offseason. And, I got to give a tip of the cap to Deebo Samuel, because all offseason, he was kind of on James Bradbury's top. He was on his head top. He was basically saying, the dude is not good. The dude is not good. And San Francisco went into Philadelphia, dropped 42, you know, and Deebo had an explosive, big time. Like, he had one of those Deebo Samuel games. He had one of those games like, wow, Deebo Samuel is electric, right? He had one of those games. But then it's just been continuing. You know, it happened versus Dallas. Then Seattle, that game-winning drive, James Bradbury got picked on. And it was no helping him. And, you know, for instance, when you have a DB and Philly, and the bad thing about Philly, the thing about Philly is with the whole James Bradbury situation, he is their best option, right? He is their best option. So it's not like you can just not play him. Because at that position, he's probably the best, like, available. He's the best they have. Outside of Darius Slay, he's the best guy that they have. So this secondary issue or flaw isn't going away. So when you have a DB who can't cover, I'm telling you, teams are going to continue to throw at him. It doesn't take a great offensive mind. You don't have to be fucking Bill Walsh. You don't have to be Don Curiel. You don't have to be Andy Reid. You don't have to be Mike Holmgren. and to scheme up. No, 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 no. It can be Bill Walsh, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, and me. It doesn't matter. If you have a DB who can't cover, the offense is going to pick on him. They're going to continue to throw his way. Doesn't take an architect offensive mind to figure that out or to attack that weakness. Doesn't take that. I know that. I can do that. Like, it does not take that. So, and I mean, I'm not the biggest Matt Patricia fan, but for the most part, he did a pretty solid job. I'm sure he's a little bit more advanced than their other DC that they had calling plays this year, right? I'm sure his scheme schematically, he's probably a little bit more advanced. And to Matt Patricia's credit, he did hold Seattle to 13 points for most of the game, right? Like, for a great majority of that game, he did hold them to 13 points. He did hold Seattle 13 points. Also, Matt Patricia, has there ever been a coach, or I should say a coordinator in the NFL, that just a year ago, he was an offensive coordinator, play caller. Now he's, the following year, he's now a defensive coordinator. Has that ever happened? Like, I'm just thinking about that. Like, Matt Patricia was literally an offensive coordinator last year. Now he's back to being a defensive coordinator. I've never seen anything like that in like back-to-back years. I don't know if that's ever happened in NFL history. I got to look that up. But regardless of that, it's going to be hard. And I don't care who you are. You can be Bill Parcells. You can be Bill Belichick. When you got secondary issues and your defensive line isn't dominating, you got a massive problem. Because and Philly's defensive line this year, like I said, comparatively to last year, they were ferocious. They got to the quarterback, pretty constant, regularly. The pressure, the rate that they were pressuring and getting to the quarterback was insanely insanely different from this year. They're just not getting to the quarterback as much. And it's leaving their secondary that's really, really questionable, very susceptible. And, you know, Seattle, they're not like the perfect team. You know, they're good, but they're not like this all-world team. They got flaws. But what they do have is three capable players at receiver. They have really talented pass catchers. That's where their high-end talent, Seattle's high-end talent is at their DB spot and at the receiver spot. And I knew that would be an issue for Philly because I look at DK Metcalf. He's a physical specimen, good ball skills. That's a problem. Tyler Lockett has been one of the most consistent receivers in the league. He's a speedy guy, can really just do it all. And then JSN, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, has been kind of like popping out. He started off a little slow, but he's a first-round pick. He's uberly talented, and it looks like he's finding his way, and he caught the game-winning touchdown on James Bradbury. So I knew that would be an issue, and it was a good throw from Drew Lock, but I would probably argue it was a better catch, right? And so Philly corners, they can't cover, nor can they, like, they're not great tacklers either. So in today's modern game, when you have a major liability at the corner spot and you're playing up against big-time receivers, you're at a massive disadvantage. I don't care about your scheme. I don't care who's calling the plays. If you have a liability or liabilities at the corner spot and you're playing up against big-time receivers, talented receiver rooms, you're at a massive disadvantage. And for Philly's offense, they didn't look great either. I mean, I think they haven't ran the ball as much and as effectively as they did last year. You think about the Eagles last year, they ran the ball first. They were a run-first football team, and then the running game opened up the deep passing game for AJ Brown, for Devontae Smith. I told you guys this last week. They're really relying on Devontae Smith and AJ Brown. They're really relying on those guys making big explosive plays. And, you know, and sometimes, hey, when it happens, it looks really good. They look potent offensively. And then you get games like Monday night where, you know, Jalen Hurts is a little off, he's sick, you know, the explosive plays just aren't clicking and hitting like they usually are. And their offense just looks really choppy and inconsistent. And a lot of that comes from they're just not running the football as much and as effective as they once were. Like, that's just the point of it. And, you know, kind of helps that Seattle, you know, the Seahawks, they didn't have their version of James Bradbury out there and Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams was a healthy scratch. So, like, Seattle defense, you know, addition by subtraction, they didn't have their secondary liability out there. The guy that actually Jordan Love, who stepped in place and started over Jamal Adams, caught two interceptions. So, you know, Seattle's liability in their secondary quickly turned into would help them win the game with forcing those turnovers, right? But it's like with Philly, this is a huge issue, and it's an issue that's not going away. Like, it's not going away. And my thing is, people like, you gotta, defense comes with effort, and it's like, okay, in NFL, like, I get it. Defense, I think having the keys to having a successful defense is obviously effort, talent, scheme. Those three things. And Philly's scheme doesn't seem off. I'm sure the Eagles players, I'm sure their defensive guys are playing with effort. I don't see lack of effort. I just don't think they're the most talented. I don't think they're the most talented from their linebacking core, even their linebacking core. They're not like that. They got Shaquille. They literally, the Eagles have Shaq Leonard playing meaningful snaps. He's not good anymore. Like, dude is cooked. The dude is, like, he is slow and cooked. So, you know, and, you know, a wise football guy once told me, he was a defensive coach, but great defensive mind. And he once told me, he was like, if your linebackers look slow, your defense looks slow. If your linebackers look fast and they're fast, your defense tends to be a little bit faster. And when I watch the Eagles linebackers, they're slow and their defense looks slow, right? So, like, that's just word of mouth. That's just word of mouth. That's what a football guy told me. He told me, he's like, hey, when your linebackers are slow, your defense tends to be and look slow. And that's what Philly looked like. Their linebackers are slow and their defense looks slow. And like I said, physicality wise, I said this last week after the Cowboy game. Physicality wise, Eagles not as physical as the 49ers. They're not as physical as the 49ers. And if the 49ers played the Eagles again, the 49ers would win. They'll win just based off of their physicality. And as I said, I know Dallas, they didn't have a great showing this week versus Buffalo, but typically Dallas is more physical than Philly. And if Dallas played Philly again, Dallas would win just based off the physicality standpoint. Like, so I once again, Nick Sirianni, this, you know, three straight losses. And I know San Francisco, like, for instance, San Francisco, they had three straight losses, but their three straight losses came and then they had a bye week. So they had time to, like, rest up, you know, prepare for that next game. They had a week, they had a whole extra week of preparation. Nah, this three game went losing streak is in the back end of their schedule. You know, the two division games, everybody was just marking those down as cupcakes, but first division games can be weird. Like, it's a division game. Division games can be weird. And I'm almost willing to bet that at least one of these Giants games, at least one of these games versus the Giants there, it's going to be pretty weird. Like Brian Daboll, Wink Martindale, that those Giants players, I don't think they're just not going to, like, they're trying to win. They're trying to win games. Like, you know, they're not going to be a playoff team, but they're trying to win games. They're not going to just quit. They're playing against the Eagles, a division rival. Like, those are not just, you know, wake up, roll out the bed type of games. The Eagles are going to have to come to play. If they don't, those games get weird. Oh, you know, and it's a division game. Division games are, anything is bound to happen. But I think a lot of people, you know, two, three weeks ago, was marking those games as W's. You know, it was just easy. But I'm almost certain that one of those Giant games, one of those games versus the Giants, it's going to look a little weird. And the city of Philadelphia, as hype and as obnoxious and as crazy as their fan base is when their Eagles are winning, they're even more crazier. They're even more harsher when the Eagles are losing. So it's not a city, they care deeply. It's, you know, with some of these other cities, like West Coast cities, you know, especially around this time, the weather isn't crazy. It's not like superly cold. It's not super cold outside. Like, it's just a different vibe. It's a different vibe. But with the Eagles and the market that they're in and their fan base, and it's cold in Philadelphia, like, it becomes even colder because the Eagles are losing games. It's not as easy. For instance, like the 49ers, their 3-game losing streak, people care about the 49ers, but, you know, like, people care. People in the Bay Area care, right? But it's not as harsh and as relentless as the Philadelphia market, because you're going to hear it all over Philadelphia radio, Philadelphia sports stations. It's going to be nationally talked about. That's just how it goes. And Philly is hard. Philly can be hard. But their offense didn't look great either. Versus that Seahawks defense, you should be able to put up at least 20 to 25 points. That Seahawks defense isn't great either. But once again, Sirianni, this is where Sirianni, Nick Sirianni, has to step up to the plate. A lot of people ask, like, okay, he doesn't call defensive plays, doesn't call offensive plays. What is he doing? What is his job? And right now, his job is to get his team back on track, get the wheels rolling again, because right now it's not looking too good. It is not looking too good. And, you know, Philly, a lot of people thought Philly had a really good chance getting back to the Super Bowl where they were last year. Me, I don't know. With their secondary issues and with their overall overlapping defensive issues, I don't know if they can get back. I'm not sure, because I think there's at least two teams that's better than them right now in their own conference, and that's San Francisco, undoubtedly, and that's Dallas. And if you watch both Dallas games, you have to walk away saying Dallas is better. Dallas is better. Regardless of Dallas' road struggles, they're better than the Eagles, right? And depending on the matchup, depending on the day, time, Detroit might be better than the Eagles. So Philly got to get it back together. Like I said, they got a couple division games to end out the year, but, man, you look at them, they got to get this thing back on track. Nick Sirianni got to find a way to get this thing back on track. Okay, so let's shift gears to another NFC East squad who played in a big-time game. Sunday afternoon, Cowboys-Bills. And Cowboys laid an egg, right? And they're going to have to figure this road thing out. But I think the story here is more about Buffalo. And I'm going to get to the Cowboys after I talk about Buffalo a little bit, because I think Buffalo, are they like peaking at the right time? Sorry, I'm just drinking my hot chocolate. But are they, are they peaking at the right time? Like, the Bills have faced a lot of adversity this year, right? Things were really looking dim around after that Cincinnati loss. Things really started looking dim after that Eagles loss. That was very much a winnable game for Buffalo. That would have been a huge win for Buffalo, you know, taking down the Eagles on the road. Like, that would have been a huge win for them. Couldn't pull it through, right? They've had a couple of close calls this year. And like I said, they faced a lot of adversity. It seems like this group might be bringing this, like, they're all just coming together. Obviously, Stephon Diggs, and, you know, he's been pretty vocal about the team. You know, Sean McDermott, he's had a couple of articles come out about him that doesn't paint him in the best light, right? Doesn't paint the best picture of him over the past couple of weeks. But I look at how, you know, the Chiefs game, were they a little lucky, perhaps? Yeah, maybe. Like, perhaps they were a little lucky. But the way how they won the Chiefs game and just, like, the total aftermath after that, and, you know, how Kansas City reacted to the call and so forth. And then you fast forward this week to week 15, where they take on Dallas, who is as hot as fish grease. Dak Prescott is as hot as fish grease, and they absolutely dominate Dallas. At times, Buffalo this year, they've looked down in the water. They've looked like they are sinking, and they're about to drown. And then this team just comes back to life with a win. And I don't know. Maybe I'm bullish on Buffalo, right? Maybe I'm just bullish. Maybe maybe my hopes on Buffalo this year is, right? I was really low on them coming into the year because I looked at Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. You know, another year with Tua and Tyreek Hill, Mike McDaniel, you know. But as things have kind of played out, Miami, like, as I've said over the past couple of weeks, I've been saying this has been my sentiment about Miami. I think they're really explosive. I think they're fun to watch. I don't think there's much substance to their style of play and how they win football games, right? I think Buffalo is a little bit more of a complete team. And in the head-to-head matchup earlier this year, that was kind of shown. The route this is going, I can very well, I wouldn't put it past it happening. I think it will happen too. I very well can see Dolphins, Bills, Week 18, division on the line. I can very well see that. And for me, if that is the possible case, if that is what is proposed to us on week 18, I would probably lean Buffalo. I would definitely probably lean with the Bills in that division bout. And let's just be clear, like, the Bills' ceiling is just higher than the Dolphins. With the mixture of their quarterback play, the improved defense, they still got, they're missing guys, but McDermott has found a scheme that works. Rasul Douglas has been a great acquisition. Their ceiling is much higher, and out of any AFC team, I would give Buffalo a better chance out of any AFC team that could possibly make the playoffs, that could beat Baltimore and Kansas City. I think Buffalo has that type of ability. When I look around the rest of the AFC landscape, I don't see another team that poses the threat that Buffalo poses towards a Baltimore or a Kansas City. I just don't see it. So like I said, they're hard to gamble on. They're hard to bet on. But I think the Bills are starting to hit their stride. And hey, I'm going to talk about Sean McDermott. He's been getting treated like he's just like a scrub coach. Like he's fucking Josh McDaniels or Brandon Staley or like he's Ron Rivera. Like, no. Sean McDermott, over the past several years, have gone 13 wins, 11 wins, 13 wins. The dude wins a lot of football games, and he's been winning a lot of football games since he's been the coach of the Bills. Granted, he's had some playoff blunders. The Bills haven't been able to get over the top, but just the way I hear certain people talk about Sean McDermott and, you know, the conversations that I hear of him, he's getting treated like he's just not, like he's not a proven guy, like he doesn't have several years consecutively of being able to dominate and win a lot of football games on a regular basis. And like I said, he's the DC. So that defensive effort, that defensive game plan that you saw versus Dallas and Mike McCarthy and Dak, he held that offense in check. That was Sean McDermott. That was Sean McDermott that did that. He very much held that offense in check. And like I said, the Bills offensively have looked dramatically better, scheme-wise especially, since Joe Brady has taken over. So, you know, like I said, I think the Bills' ceiling, it's high. It always has been high. But when McDermott is dialing it up like that on defense and they're getting some balanced offensive play, I think that's when they're at their best. Josh Allen is very much a wild card. He can be turnover prone and he can throw you out of games. But Josh Allen, the talent can't be denied. The physical abilities can't be denied. So, like, hey, like I said, looking around the rest of the AFC landscape, quarterback, coach, weapons, ceiling, I think Buffalo presents the biggest threat to Kansas City and Baltimore. Just based off a quarterback, coach, you know, experience, I think they present the biggest challenges because of those things. For Buffalo or for a defense like Baltimore or a defense like Kansas City, I think it's a lot easier for them to hold a Tua-led offense in check than it would be a Josh Allen-led offense paired up with Stephon. I think it'll be a lot easier for those defense to keep Tua in that offense in check than a Josh Allen offense. You know what I mean? Just looking at the rest of the landscape of the AFC, I'm giving Buffalo as good as a shot to beat Baltimore and Kansas City over anybody else. I think that's fair game. And with the Cowboys, everyone's going to overreact. I feel like the Cowboys, they got so hot. Dak was playing so well. I was like, the moment, people are just waiting on the moment for the Cowboys to lose or for Dak not to look good. And then it's then this big explosion is just going to happen and everybody's going to take to the internet. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to overreact. I will say this, though. These next two matchups for Dallas, you know, I think they're better matchups first, like just scheme-wise, schematically. I think the, like, Dolphins-Lions, I think these matchups are suited for Dallas to win. Now, I'm not saying they're locks to beat Miami and Detroit. I'm not saying Dallas is going to put belt to ass versus Detroit and Miami. But thinking about how Dallas plays with their physicality, I think they match up better with Miami and Detroit. Miami, I think they can physically just dominate Miami on both sides of the ball, you know, off on the offensive line of scrimmage and the defensive line of scrimmage. And then versus Detroit, it's at home. Detroit's defense and their secondary especially, highly suspect. I think that's a game where Dak and Dallas and that offense, they can put up about 35, 40 points on the right day versus that Detroit Lions defense. So I think these next two games, people will, if Dallas do what they do, people will, again, take them seriously again, and it'll get them back on track. So I want to get to the Sunday night football game, Ravens-Jaguars, that took place. The Ravens won. It was never really in doubt. Jacksonville, they kind of stalled out on in the first half on several drives where they got in the red zone, they got in scoring positions. They even missed the field goal. They missed like two field goals. At the end of the half, they ran out of time. They had no timeouts, couldn't get out of bounds, couldn't spike it. Time expired, so forth, so forth. I will say this, and with the Ravens, this will be quick. This feels like their year. The AFC is laundered. It's just, like I kind of talked about it earlier at the top of the episode, but, you know, no Joe Burrow. Cincinnati doesn't have Joe Burrow. Pittsburgh has no quarterback. Cleveland has Joe Flacco quarterbacking. With all due respect, he looks really good. He's looked pretty good, but Joe Flacco's like 50 years old. He just came off the couch a couple weeks. Like, I don't think they form a threat to Baltimore in terms of the playoffs. The AFC East still up for grabs. But I don't think Baltimore would lose sleep over Miami. Buffalo, as I mentioned in my previous segment, I think Buffalo is the wild card. Kansas City, granted, their defense is elite this year, but this is by far the least explosive offense that they have had in the Mahomes era, which leaves them susceptible. They struggle on a weekly basis to score 24 points. So, and then I look at the AFC South, you know, 3-8-6 teams. Couple of those teams, we didn't even feel like they would be like playoff. They would be in playoff contention, nowhere near playoff contention. Hey, Indianapolis, they're 8-6. Houston, 8-6. Jacksonville, like, so all three of them are 8-6, right? So just looking at the landscape of the AFC, and I kind of hinted towards it on the previous segment while talking about Buffalo. For Lamar, granted, I thought, you know, Baltimore always deals with the injury bug. But outside of that, this feels like Baltimore's year. You know, Lamar has improved drastically with his passing game, pocket presence. As a pure thrower, he's improved, right? Their defense is awesome and formidable. I think when the dust settles, as the season winds down and we're fully into the playoffs, I think it's safe to say that Baltimore is going to probably end up with the one seed. They got a big, huge Christmas Day game versus the 49ers. These look like the two best teams in football. So that's going to be a huge game for Baltimore. I think it's going to be at Baltimore. But other than that, I mean, Baltimore, they look really good. And I think, you know, obviously in the Lamar era, they haven't quite had the playoff success that they have wanted. They've had a couple of, you know, some tough losses to Tennessee and Buffalo. Last couple of years, Lamar has gotten hurt towards the back end of the season as they were making a playoff push. So it'll be good to see Lamar Jackson and this new and improved offense with these weapons and the defense that they have. This should definitely Super Bowl or bust, but definitely this should be an AFC championship like team. This team, I am expecting the Ravens to be in the AFC Championship game. With them having a one seed, that means they literally have to win one playoff game to be in the AFC Championship game. So I'm expecting that. I'm expecting them fully to be there and get there, and I think they got as good as a shot as anyone to win the conference. That being said. Now, let me move on to Jacksonville, because I think this is the biggest story with this whole Sunday night game. And it's I'm not gonna just overreact, but this is just what I have been watching, and this is analysis that has kind of been built up, and now this is like the boiling tipping point. This is where the volcano kind of erupts. And the hype machine can kind of grow out of control, right? Like, if you're in media, if you're in sports media, if you're in some form of sports media, you can be guilty of falling in love with the hype machine, falling in love with the new hype thing, whatever it is, right? I think it comes with the job. It comes with the territory. Like for instance, Caleb Williams is to watch college. If you watch college football last year, and to watch Caleb Williams and not say or not think like, wow, this guy is not only the best player in college football, but like, I can't wait to see what he can do at the NFL level. And he's definitely the number one draft pick, right? Like, he's number one. And it's kind of, and I root for Caleb Williams. I think he's really good, but it was kind of like, okay, this past year, there were some rough patches. He was critiqued. He got picked apart. And I think that's okay. It kind of slows down the hype machine. But with Trevor Lawrence, he was super hype. And he was looked upon as one of the greatest prospects at the position. When we talk about all-time great prospects and hyped prospects coming out of their respective colleges, you think about John Elway coming out of Stanford. You think about Peyton Manning coming out of Tennessee. You think about Andrew Luck coming out of Stanford. You think about Trevor. He was mentioned in those same conversations, in those same names. He was mentioned. And, you know, it didn't help that as a true freshman, he won the national title and he beat Nick Saban. And then he just continued to have a really dominant career at Clemson. All-time great Clemson team. He's led some all-time great Clemson teams and so forth. Number one draft pick. And let's be real. And I like Trevor Lawrence. But so far, for all of the hype, it feels like he has underachieved. And that's just my take. And granted, his rookie season kind of gave him a pass because Urban Meyer was an absolute like misfire, and he was just bad. It was bad. No, he wasn't gonna succeed under those circumstances. Cool. Second year starts off a little slow with Doug Peterson. But around November, from November all the way up to the playoffs, Trevor Lawrence looked really good. That was the best stretch of his career. From mid-November all the way up into the playoffs, that has so far been the best stretch of his career. But this year, he's been just a little turnover. He's been turnover prone. His arm doesn't look as strong. I just don't see the same pop in his arm, in his throws. Accuracy kind of hit or miss and spotty. And I've been watching football for some time. I spend a lot of hours, probably too many hours. But I spent a lot of hours, especially watching like quarterbacks, and you can kind of like, you know, when guys are special and when guys have elite traits. I'm sorry. And I look at Josh Allen. I watch Josh Allen play. I look at Josh Allen's tape. I watch Patrick Mahomes' tape. Hell, I watch Justin Herbert's tape. I'm like, oh yeah, like these guys just pop off the screen. Even Lamar, like, some of the throws at Lamar, it just pops off your screen. It pops off the film. I'm looking, I'm trying to see it. Like, literally, I'm trying to see it with Trevor Lawrence. I'm really trying to see what are the elite traits. What does he do special? What makes him so special? I don't see it. I don't see it. I just haven't seen it. You know, I think at times, yeah, he's mobile, he's athletic, you know, got athleticism, he got good size. I know he's been dealing with some injuries, little knick-knack injuries. But I thought this was the year where they, like, Jacksonville, like, I think very similarly to a lot of people and a lot of, like, media pundits, we thought Jacksonville was trending upward just thinking about last year and thinking about going into this year. Super Bowl winning head coach. You're adding Calvin Ridley. What we thought, we thought they played in a crappy division in AFC South. But I think a lot of our predictions about Jacksonville and a lot of what we thought coming into the season about Jacksonville positively was contingent on Trevor Lawrence taking that next step and picking up where he left off in elevating and only improving. But we have yet to see that from last year. We haven't seen that carryover effect into this year. We haven't. He's very turnover prone. He fumbles religiously, like, very often. In the Jaguars, that's the funny part. The Jaguars, they don't have, like, this super loaded, talented roster, right? But they were contingent on him turning into a top seven, a top five to seven quarterback and him being a star. And he has not looked that way. So granted, the Ravens, their defense is awesome. And, you know, it's going to be hard to put up 20 plus 25, 30 points on this Ravens defense. But I can separate results from what I actually see and what it look like, right? I can separate that. Okay, you don't put up 400, you don't put up 350 yards and four touchdowns. But there should be things that pop that I should see. There should be throws that you make that I see. They're like, okay, this is what makes him elite. And I'm just not seeing it. I'm just not seeing it with Trevor Lawrence. And I watched the film. I'm just not seeing it. I'm just not seeing it. And I'm not saying he's a bust. I'm not saying he's overrated. But what I am saying is, for all of the hype so far, thus far, in his young career, he's underachieved. He's underachieved. And like I said, with Jacksonville, a lot of us had high hopes for Jacksonville and thought they can be sneaky this year because we thought the improvement of Trevor Lawrence and we thought he would take this leap, given what we saw from last year and how he ended last year, you know, playing good football in November, December, January. We thought that elevation and that leap would just take place and, like, boom, right there, like, right then and there, he could possibly be a dark horse MVP contender. And he's nowhere near that. He's been nowhere near that. You know, a lot of people thought he had the chance to be a top seven-ish quarterback this year, you know, around that top seven mark. Is he even a top 10 guy? Like, you know, and the thing about it is, you look at the AFC South, it's kind of crazy. It's crazy how, in a matter, and this shows you how fast the league can change, because coming a couple months ago, several months ago, when the season first started, no one thought Indianapolis and Houston would be playoff teams, right? Like, no one thought that. Shane Steichen we thought could develop Josh, you know, Richardson, we thought he could develop him, Richardson, Anthony Richardson. But they're winning games with Gardner Minshew, and like you just look at their talent, it like Indianapolis doesn't scream playoff team. Houston, they had a young rookie quarterback in C.J. Stroud. They've also dealt with their share line of injuries, but for them to be 8-6 at this point, that wasn't expected. And C.J. Stroud's really, really good. He's really good and he's having one of the best rookie seasons ever at the quarterback position. But they kind of still, even if they do sneak into the playoffs, they still kind of feel a year away from being a year away. So it kind of shows you how things can change and how, like, because you would expect, okay, Jacksonville, we thought they were just going to run away with this division, and we thought they had a chance to possibly get a top two seed with their schedule and their division. But the division has been better than what we thought. But also, more importantly, their quarterback play with Trevor Lawrence just hasn't been as good as we thought it would be. And the scary part about this whole thing is Indianapolis and Houston, I assume they're going to get better, especially Houston. Now, with Anthony Richardson, we still got to see, you know, if he pans out or not. He has elite traits. You know, Anthony Richardson, he got elite traits. He has elite abilities. We got to see if Shane Steichen can fine-tune it. And, you know, we got to see how that works and how they develop. But with Houston, I mean, another year of drafting, another year of free agency, another year with, you know, C.J. Stroud under center, Houston is going to get better. Houston is going to get better. And C.J. Stroud has shown that he's the truth. So, that like, this whole – a lot of this of what we thought about Jacksonville, a lot of it was really contingent on Trevor Lawrence becoming this star / superstar quarterback and him and us thinking he will turn into like this top seven guy. And it just hasn't happened yet. It hasn't materialized itself yet, especially this year. We haven't seen a lot of flashes this year. So pretty interesting. Jacksonville, they got some things to fine tune. Now, luckily for them, they end the season off kind of soft. Tampa Bay, they're 7-7. They got Indianapolis, and they got the Titans, I think. But no. I think they got Tampa Bay, Titans, Panthers. That's the last three games. So they got like a little soft stretch before the postseason. And they should still win a division, I guess. But Trevor Lawrence, I think it's safe to say so far he has underachieved. Not saying he's a bust. Not saying he can't ever be a top seven quarterback or whatever. But up until this point, it just hasn't looked as advertised. He hasn't looked as advertised. And it has you wondering, like, hey, is this, like, what makes this guy special? That's all. But let's move on to the association. I want to talk about Ja Morant and his debut. And also, lastly, I'm going to top it off with my top 10 teams. So let's move to the association. I did promise that we'll talk about Ja Morant and his return. I don't want to make this too long because I want to get to my top 10 teams list. I know I'm pushing an hour long pod, but I hope you guys have been enjoying the content. You know, for all my football lovers, my NFL people, hope you guys are enjoying it. My NBA people, haven't forgot about you. Trying to still leave some time in there for you. But Ja Morant returned from suspension after his 25-game suspension. Now, it is important to note, that he was still able to practice and be around the team. Probably point in case as to one of the reasons why he looked so good in his debut. He, you know, being able to stay in basketball shape, being able to practice, definitely probably helped. Probably still not in like game shape, but it's not like he hasn't touched the basketball, right, in like a month or two. Like he's been able to be a part of, be around a part of the team. And I will say this, he had a game-winning bucket over the Pelicans. They win by two, and he dropped 34 and 8. And he looked really good. Obviously, like I said, probably not in like game shape or like what he would define his quote unquote best shape. But it's not like he hasn't touched a basketball in 2 months, right? He's still been around the team and practicing. I just wanted to come on here and just basically say, no one, I don't think, there is not a lot of people that question the gifts, the special traits, and the skill of Ja Morant, the basketball player. Because I woke up this morning, even after the game, but I woke up this morning and I saw, you know, people just talk about, I told you guys he's going to be back. It's like he's never left. And it, you know, a lot of the criticism, basically all of the criticism and backlash that Ja Morant has received over the past 6 to 8 months isn't about his game. It has nothing to do with his on the floor performance. It has everything to do with how he conducts himself and what he does off the floor. So him coming back, dropping 34 and 8, is phenomenal. It's good for the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant is he is a needle pusher. It's good for the league. He is one of, if not the most influential player actively. I mean, I know Steph probably has something to say about that with the 3-point shot. He's very relatable. But if you ask, I don't know, a 12-year-old who's their favorite player, they're probably going to say Ja Morant. Like, if you ask a 10-year-old who's their favorite player, they're probably going to say Ja Morant. He's highly, highly entertaining and explosive, and he's special. He is a generational type talent. And this is why he received so much backlash, and this is why people were trying to pick apart his actions off the floor, because we recognize and we realize how elite and how special a talent and a person he is, and how influential he is. He has a lot of influence. He carries a lot of weight, especially in with kids. Right. So I don't, like I said, I don't want to make it too long. Right. But I just see people like, man, Ja, it's like he's never, like, we told you guys he'll be back. And it's like, no. It has nothing to do with his game. It has everything to do with his off the court antics. His off the court antics led to a lot of judgment and criticism, some harsh, some rightfully so. And it led to just a lot of people critiquing. But that's all because we know how special he is on the court. So it was really good to see Ja Morant come back, help the Grizzlies get back on track, because they probably have the second worst record in the conference. Second on, like, they're struggling. They're 1-11 at home. Like, they're struggling miserably, right? And for those people that was like, the Grizzlies are better with Ja Morant, they're better without Ja Morant, BS, right? Like, they're better with Ja Morant on the floor. But yeah, so that'll be that. But I just wanted to touch on that. He's special. I hope the 25-game suspension And I hope all of the disciplinary actions that was taken over the offseason and that was put in place, I hope he's able to just put all that stuff behind him, have a good year. Like, I hope that's just done, right? We don't need no more of that. He's just he could if he plays it right, he could be easily one of the faces of this league in like the next year or two if he plays his card. He's already that, but like he can ascend. There's more ascending for him to do. You get the gist. But let's go on to my top 10 teams going into week 16. We're 16. We going into week 16. You guys know I give you guys my top 10 teams list on a weekly basis. I take this list very seriously. It consists of the same teams I had on my list last week. The order is just a little bit different. So let's dive into it. At 10, the Browns. I think they're one of the weirdest, funniest stories of the NFL season this year. They have had some, they lost their best player on offense in Nick Chubb. They have lost their starting $230 million quarterback in Deshaun Watson. Like, they have had so much adversity. This defense, pretty good. It was putting up some historical numbers earlier this year, but it's pretty good. But now they found a diamond in the rough in Joe Flacco, and he's found a fountain of youth. And he looks okay. He looks pretty good. He looks decent. The Browns, they just find ways to win games. Kind of hard not to keep them in my 10. So I got them in my 10, at 10. At 9, I got the Rams. Matthew Stafford's on an absolute tear. He's absolutely on fire. Now, their defense is really young. But offensively, I think the Rams can present a lot of issues for you. Obviously, Stafford is a gunslinger. They have Puka Nacua. Obviously, Cooper Kupp is quietly having a really good year. He's quietly has been really good since coming back from his injury. So Stafford, those guys are clicking. I must say, you know, a lot of people was questioning if Sean McVay, if he can win, you know, at the rate, or, you know, could he have success with lesser talent? He's proven that he could, that he can. He's proven it. I never questioned it because I always have been really high on Sean McVay, but I must admit, this is one of his best coaching jobs, if not the best coaching job he's done since becoming the Rams head coach. So big, you know, tip of the cap to Sean McVay. This Rams team is on fire. I think they're destined to make the playoffs. And they're scary. They're scary. They are scary. So be careful if you have to play the Rams in that wild card round in the NFC. Rams at 9. At 8, I had the Dolphins. They have incredible depth offensively. I bet you guys didn't know this. Raheem Mostert has 20 touchdowns on the season. With 3 games left, Raheem Mostert has 20 touchdowns left. He has 20 touchdowns on the season with 3 games left. Absolutely remarkable. Bet you didn't know that. That's the stat of the day. But my problem continues to linger. They're 0-3 versus teams with winning records. So they play Dallas this upcoming week. As I mentioned earlier, I think that's a really good matchup for Dallas. Like I said, I don't think they're gonna just put belt the ass versus Miami. But I do think Miami will lose that game. But I still like them. I think they're fun, exciting to watch. They're really high-flying and explosive, but I think they have a defined ceiling due to their lack of physicality. And, you know, defensively, they're just not – they leave a ton to be desired. Dolphins at 8. At 7, I have the Lions. Now, the Lions are really physical up front, but I don't trust them on the road. Now, good thing is – they're going to probably win their division, and they're going to at least be guaranteed at least one home game. So, you know, they'll probably win their first playoff game that they play in. But, you know, after that, I really don't know. Their passing game is good. Their rookies. I love how their rookies have been so impactful. Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta. Both really good picks in the draft this past year. Here's another funny stat about the Lions. They're 9-1 when they hold teams to 28 points or less. So if the Lions, if they're able, if their defense just doesn't have a, like a crazy bad day and they're able to keep their opponents under 28, they usually win a lot of games. Now, the problem to that and, you know, the kicker to that is their defense is highly susceptible, especially with that secondary. So we got to see how that plays out. Lions at 7. At 6, I have the Eagles. I talked a lot about their defense in the in my first segment. Talked a lot about their defense. Their defense is struggling. And James Bradbury, he's just been getting picked on. It's like anybody's offense on James Bradbury, right? Teams are going to continue to attack him. But their offense, last three games, 16 points per game over the last three. That's just not going to cut it. I don't like the rhythm of their offense. They got to get back to, you know, trying to have some type of sustained run game. Teams are playing a lot more zone. And Jalen Hurts hasn't improved. Not to say he's regressing, but he hasn't improved like past years. Like past year, he's improved each and every year. But this year, it's kind of like he's been stagnant. And defenses have kind of caught on to them a little bit offensively. Eagles at 6. At 5, I got the Cowboys. Like I said, I'm not going to overreact to their loss to the Bills, but I do think they are a different team on the road. They are. That's just quite frankly. That's like if the Cowboys, if they play all of their games at home, it wouldn't even be fair. Because they're a totally different team. If they had the number one seed locked up in the NFC, the Cowboys literally would probably be a lock to make it to the Super Bowl because they're that good at home. But on the road, they struggle. They struggle big time. They got to get better on the road. I think this upcoming week is a chance for them to like rewrite some of their road struggles versus Miami. But they have it's a lot to like about this Cowboys team. So I'm not going to overreact. Cowboys at 5. At 4, the Chiefs. Now, I think they are going to be fine. My gut is saying they have receiver issues. You know, they're unsettled at the receiver spot. They got some offensive things that they need to tweak out. But I'm going to say they're going to be fine. Now, here's the kicker. Here's a stat that I found. They're 7-0 when scoring 21 points or more. The problem is they struggle to get to 21 points. That's the kicker. So if their offense is scoring, if they're able to put together some touchdown drives, the defense is elite enough to hold the opposing offense. But the problem is Kansas City, they can't put points on the board. They struggle to put points on the board. You know, Mahomes doesn't trust Kadarius Toney. Travis Kelce's been kind of banged up this year. Like, offensively, they have just struggled, and it's just been a seesaw. So, Chiefs at 4. At 3, I got the Bills. Respectfully, the Bills did beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead. Granted, they may have been lucky, maybe, maybe not. But I got the Bills at 3. They may have found some secret sauce. They're running the football a lot more consistent with effectiveness. Joe Brady, and since he's taken over, the offense has looked a lot more efficient. It looks better. I got them at 3. At 2, I got the Ravens. I think their defense is awesome. I worry about on the back end, hey, can they stay healthy? In the back end of their schedule, can they stay healthy? Ronnie Stanley got hurt. They're already missing a couple guys in their offense, like Mark Andrews, J.K. Dobbins, who, like, those guys are out for the season. So can the Ravens remain to stay healthy? I like them a lot. I think I'm almost willing to say they're a lock for the AFC Championship game. Ravens at 2. And then at number 1, you guys know, I have the 49ers. They're really good. I don't know. Like, week in, week out, I watched them put up a dominant performance. They haven't looked back after, you know, rewriting the wrong of their three-game losing streak. They haven't looked back, and it looks like they're destined to get the number one seed in the NFC. So that'll be that. That is my top 10 teams list for this week going into week 16. Hope you guys enjoyed this pod. That was a lot. I know it's pretty long, pretty lengthy, but I hope you guys enjoyed the content. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Your boy is out. Peace. Deuces. I'm gone.